So now we talk about, again, now that I've kind of ventured way out into the metaphysical realms, I'm going to see if I can bring it back and define some tools that we can use as reminders. Anything can be a reminder, a sound. This whole weekend is about sound and on an acoustic level. And our favorite music, something that really inspires us. We've had ample examples to draw from here. Those kinds of experiences, whether it be acoustic, visual, or just feeling, and just that moment-to-moment awareness that taps us into. But anything, whether it's a number, whether it's a phrase, a fragrance, it could be so many things that just can tap us into, depending on our intention and motivation, into one thought system or another. And if we hold the intention that we want to tap into the thought system of oneness and integration, then everything that we see will become a mnemonic or a reminder for that. So again, the symbols aren't that important, but it's the perspective or the eyes, so to speak, through which we view those that becomes crucial. The important thing is not to make the symbol the bow down and you know, graven images and all that kind of stuff. Caroline Casey has this show called The Visionary Activist. It's on KPFA. Anybody listen to that? It's kind of a cool show. There's one person. And she has this metaphor. She says, you know, we have this tendency to make a statue and worship the finger, you know, rather than paying attention to where the finger's pointing. The symbol, yeah, sure, they're fun, but don't get attached to the symbol. You know, they're just placeholders or substitute for the words of the ancient master is a certain discipline that some of you might be familiar with talks about. In The Life of Brian, another great movie, it's pretty silly as all the Python movies are, but you know, he's got this throng of followers, and he loses a shoe, so all the people that he, not that he wants followers, follow his example and take off the shoe. You know, perfect example of getting the dogma bass-ackwards, and it's like, anyway, you got it. So I like to think, I think what got me into sacred geometry originally, you know, a few decades ago, was the idea that mathematics and geometry, even as limited as they are in terms of the absolute, math is pretty constant. You know, you can go to other galaxies, presumably, and you know, go backwards and forwards in time, and the, you know, square root of 9 is probably going to be 3, regardless of where you are in space-time, right? So I like universality, something that doesn't rely, or minimally relies at best, on space-time and cultural specifics. Sound embodies the principle of interconnectedness because the acoustics that we link, just the sound of our voices with each other, we're in that entrainment, that bath, if you will, of the spheres of radiating sound that we're all enjoying, remind us that we're all interwoven. And that interconnectedness is true regardless of space-time. And it leads us toward the healing, which really occurs as a result of that thought system. Okay. Again, the idea is to use the symbols as reminders. So having said that, let's talk about the 7 Hermetic Laws. And these relate to understanding the dream and how we can wake up from it. And there's some geometric symbols that, to me, resonate nicely with these. But again, it's not the form that's particularly important. And you can, your mileage may vary. Use your own. If you have a symbol that relates to one of these laws, or a set of laws, for that matter, that work for you, I mean, this is just something that I found to be useful, and hopefully that's the intent for me sharing it with you today. And again, these are from the book called The Kabbalion. There's 7 of these. Mentalism, correspondence, vibration, polarity, rhythm, cause and effect, and gender or generation. They seem like kind of a grand metaphysical theory of everything, or a grand unified theory. The first one is mentalism. All is mind. The universe is mental. And there's some aspects of that. The idea of awareness, oneness, perfection, creation, expectation, identification, and infinity. We're aware of our body, so we're more than our body. If we can be aware of something, then we're more than that. That's the premise here. And we're aware of our mind, so we're more than our mind. Consciousness is sort of like the big unanswered question, not only in physics, but in life. What is consciousness? When we have that state of mindfulness, what is that really all about? What is that lucidity all about? That awareness really transcends space-time dimension and embraces the void, the ineffable, that peaceful quality that goes beyond words. So a symbol that might really work well for mentalism is a point expanding to an infinite circle or an infinite sphere. Because a point would be the quintessence. It occupies no space, yet exists in space. A perfect metaphysical symbol, right? Mathematically, it's indefinitely small. And the point, our language is full of great metaphors too, the point of our existence is really infinite. As our minds expand, or as our awareness unfolds to ever-widening spheres of understanding, then we release the assumptions, the illusions, and go beyond the limitations. So let's say that the physical world is the observed, or the object, and the mental activity is the process of observing the word. Then who or what is the observer? What is the subject? This is, again, what's called the ghost in the machine, which is basically what really is giving modern physics, the ones that are the Newtonian, you know, attached types, just totally conniption fixed, because it's like, wait a minute, who's the observer here? And no, we can't have an observer. There's no such thing as consciousness in physics, you know. It's like, it's not going to work with the old Newtonian model. So the whole thing gets turned upside down, and then consciousness becomes a foundation rather than an add-on. The point exists everywhere, truly, if there's no space and time. And a sphere of any number of dimensions expanded to infinity encloses infinite oneness. So we're neither in both. So there's that paradox that, again, from within space-time, we always have confusions and paradoxes and conflicts, because duality of itself is intrinsically confusing. But unity consciousness, or unity awareness, rather, is really something that can resolve those paradoxes to where we can say, oh, I'm neither and both, and we can be at peace with that. If we're a perfect changeless essence, beyond words, beyond symbols, beyond even anything the mind can envision, we could call that the Tao, the void, the singularity, and countless other names. And we really, like this lesson from the Course in Miracles workbook says, we really give the meaning everything that it has for us, moment to moment. Expectation is crucial in understanding the law of mentalism, because the self-fulfilling prophecy works so beautifully every moment. The key to that really is expectation. There's a wonderful book by Neville called Feeling is a Secret. Neat little book. It's part of a collection called The Resurrection. He's really right on the mark, because feeling is the secret. And I put attitude there because the attitude we have, just like an airplane has an attitude gyro, if we're out of balance and if we feel kind of a tilt in our gut, so to speak, that's our indication. And feeling in our human existence is that gyroscopic indicator that when something doesn't feel right, when our intuition says, a good example of that was years ago, I had a bicycle when I was on the Davis campus as an undergraduate, and I never locked it. And one evening, it was like this gut feeling like, okay, you've got this lock, use it tonight. And I went back and it was gone. So learned my lesson. So anyway. But it's worked in a lot of other positive ways too. It's like, you know, you trust your intuition. Like the other day, it's like, okay, should I try to make it over Siskiyou Pass and then over the Grapevine to be here? Yes. And here I am, and I'm loving this. So had I gone a day before or after, it would have been a mess, but you know, it all worked out. So anyway. But that's the idea, is to help each other remember to follow our intuition and tune into that awareness of oneness that leads us out of the nightmare into the happy dream. And a mentalism, the recognition that that's a mental universe, that we're making it up as we go along, it can be a big part of that. And gratitude is a huge part of that, the secret of that part of that attitude. And moment to moment, we choose how we feel. I mean, years ago, I made a big placard on computer printout paper in big black letters, I'm choosing to feel this way. And I'd look at that every day and I'd say, when I was really in a great mood, I'd say, yeah, of course. The challenge, of course, is when you get yourself into a snit or whatever, and you say, all right, yeah. And then, but when it stares you in the face and you realize it's true, it's like, okay, every moment we really are choosing how we feel moment to moment. We may not want to admit it, but we really do have some say in the matter at each moment. So, and again, it's what we identify with that makes a huge difference. So if we identify with a transpersonal awareness, which is, I think, really the whole point of healing, is going beyond the personal to resonate with that feeling of freedom and oneness that comes with what we would call a feeling of love, then we're identifying with unlimitedness, and that moves us more and more into the happy dream, if you will. I like this quote from the Talmud. We do not see things as they are. We see them as we are. So the second of the two laws is the law of correspondence. As above, so below. As below, so above. And we've probably heard this countless times in different ways. And a good symbol for the law of correspondence would be the Vesica Pisces, which I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with, which is two overlapping circles. The eye, the mouth, the stomata in plants, the leaves, many leaves have this shape. If you look at the microphotographs of the cell mitosis, you see the the spires, you know, align, the spindles or whatever, lining up with that sort of magnetic-looking pattern that forms a sort of a vesicle shape. And what better metaphor than the eye or the mouth for communion or communication, which really, a key word for this law, I think, would be love, because when we're in a state of acceptance of all that is, then we're allowing the free exchange of the oneness to transpire and the kinship with life. Also with the Vesica Pisces, too, with the sense that there's two equal and overlapping circles that just touch each other exactly at the center. It's sort of a metaphor for we touch each other at the heart or the very center of who we are. Synchronicity is another good example of the law of correspondence. It could be another way of saying that the patterns exist in dimensions and realities that we don't usually recognize. And we say, oh, what a coincidence, which is nothing more than incidents co-responding, perhaps on other dimensional levels. I love the Edwin Abbott's metaphor of flatland. Anybody know about flatland? The idea that, you know, here you have this two-dimensional surface, and what a great metaphor for what we think of as 3D. And I'm going to show some examples at the end of some three-dimensional movies of four-dimensional objects that are pretty cool that a friend of mine created. But if for the moment, imagine, if you will, like a paper universe and these creatures on flatland. If you were to poke a pencil through their reality, you know, time to call National Enquirer. You know, I've got this, you know, this black point, you know, going through, you know, this black circle that's getting wider. Now it's a brown circle. Now it's a yellow hexagon. Now it's a hexagon for quite a while. Now it's a pink circle. And it disappeared, you know. You know, call a shrink. You know, I'm having a hallucination. You know, and so those things. You know, we make woo-woo, you know, stuff out of that, because in our reality, that we only, you know, limit ourselves to three spatial dimensions and one temporal dimension. We think, ooh, that's a big deal, you know, when people do, you know, paranormal stuff, you know. But yet, from a more expanded reality, that's probably just everyday stuff, right? You know, if somebody in an ultra dimensional reality want to have a little fun at our expense, they would just, you know, take the equivalent of the pencil and go through our reality. But anyway. Other examples of the law of correspondence, shared lucid dreams, intuitive flashes, when our muse seems in a virtuosity state, you know, psychometry, psychokinesis, all the clairs, you know, the clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsentience, all those kind of things that, again, we associate with paranormal stuff in our usual, but sound healing would be a perfect example of that. I mean, here we're, you know, action at a distance, through a mechanism that isn't readily understood. Self-reference, another good example of correspondence, the as above, so below. So here we're talking in a physical sense, the self-similar patterns of fractals are self-referential, perfect examples of the law of correspondence, because each small portion is identical to the larger portion, and there's that oneness, again, it's this principle of oneness reflected in so many different ways. In Oriental medicine, the acupuncture, you know, the points on the ear and the hand and the foot all correspond to different internal organs. The talk earlier today, we're talking about some of the gentleman, the second gentleman this morning, whose name I'm forgetting at the moment, but forgive me. It had a list of names, and one of them was Beverly Rubik, who's doing a thing with Kirlian photography, where you map the energy on the fingertips to the various organs of the body, and doing that in almost real time. So again, the fractal patterns. Here's a zoomed in portion of a Mandelbrot set. You know, the communities, branches, coastlines, the constellations, all these different patterns that have that self-similar quality. It's nature's way of saying, hey, you know, wake up, folks. There's this principle of oneness and interconnectedness that has to do in a very particular ways with that principle of correspondence, that the above and the below correspond, and within, without, and so forth, regardless of the size. So dimension starts dropping away. So by using a higher law, perhaps more accurately, a more inclusive law, we're able to transcend or transmute less inclusive laws. This is going to get a little abstract, but if anybody's had a little bit of modern physics, I only took one semester of it, but I remember the Lorentz transformation. And what that was basically you add another little factor into the Newtonian physics equations. And what it does is it says, okay, all the Newtonian stuff is a subset of this larger law, which includes that. And I think that's the idea, is if we go to principles and thought systems and paradigms that are more inclusive, which obviously includes the inclusiveness of our heart connections with all beings, then that inclusiveness brings us to a much more complete awareness, just automatically. So that's where the law of correspondence works well there. Influence, because that we're all interconnected, everything we think, feel, do, or say exerts an influence on everything else. The old quote of you can't pluck a flower without troubling a star, you know, that kind of thing. Conversely, everything else in the universe, you know, can potentially influence us. And again, that's where we have some measure of say in the matter as to what we choose to accept or reject. Overtones, David did a wonderful example with his guitar showing this in the last session of the harmonic overtones and how those relate to, again, the law of correspondence, you know, the octaves and so forth, and then the whole number of ratios. And I think that could also be a metaphor on a metaphysical level for our intuition. Basically, we get these harmonics, if you will, the lucid dreams, the flashes of intuition, those little intuitive promptings that say, do this, or call this person, or take this alternate route home, or what, you know, all those kind of things that we just, you know, if we listen to that intuitive knowingness, we're essentially working with the parasympathetic, if you will, or a resonant mode that is goes beyond the mundane and taps us into a higher dimensional awareness. So, the attunement then is that principle in correspondence that allows us, and it really ties into the next law, which is the law of vibration, which we'll spend a lot of time on. How am I doing on time, buddy? Anybody got the time?
5:10.
Okay. Thank you. I think I can make it. I might have to speed it up a little bit, but we'll get through it. So example of resonance and vibration would be obviously piano strings and guitar strings, like we all know about. Another classic one is the Tacoma Narrows Bridge. People have seen the movies of, you know, they basically, the engineers, before they knew any better, really, from what I understand, designed this wonderful, beautiful bridge, and they didn't realize that the resonant frequency of the wind flowing through this narrows just happened to resonate with the mechanical structure of the bridge, and down it went, you know. And then, of course, lasers and holography and all that, you know, phase entrainment and so forth. So that is a perfect segue into the third law, which is the law of vibration, which fits exquisitely well with this weekend, I would say. Nothing rests, everything moves, everything vibrates. And you've probably all seen the classic examples of the sinusoidal or sine waves. And again, the frequencies, high and low frequency, high and low amplitude, and phases, and all the different nuances of phase, together combine to make up all the things that we can hear and see and taste and touch, all our sensory data. And it's really just the rich and diverse mix of all those that makes those up. And that's why electronic music synthesizers and you know, digital synthesis can make literally any kind of sound you want, because it's really just a matter of adding at the right time the right amplitude, frequency, and phase of the various waveforms from building up from sinusoids. Obviously, it can get pretty complicated if we try to do that from scratch, but the idea is that the principle of a sine wave, again, it gets us back to the circle. You know, and then that vibration, again, would be a good metaphor geometrically for any time we see something that's vibrating, it's basically saying we have a choice of what we want to resonate with. Okay, what we want to feel moment to moment. Again, we see about one octave of light out of maybe 80 octaves. In terms of the electromagnetic energy, we can measure about 80 octaves or about 25 orders of magnitude. And that's just what we can detect with our current instruments, at least last I checked into it anyway. But how about the crossover of senses? You know, what do galaxies hear? What do quarks see? You know, just kind of fun questions to ponder. And light, of course, is a perfect metaphysical metaphor for what we are. We're you know, we've heard from the mystics for time immemorial that we're light beings. And the neat thing about light is it doesn't experience time. Another little tidbit that I ran across recently, I don't think I've got here in this presentation, is tachyons have, I believe it is, 3 time dimensions and 1 space dimension. I thought that was kind of cool. So, you know, just a little something to put in your hat kind of thing. But in terms of light, you've got the electric field and the magnetic field that are basically on orthogonal axes on this diagram, or right angles, if you will. So essentially, the kind of like the Planck's constant thing again, light basically is energy that winks out of existence and then comes out the other side and then comes back together, and you know, it does this dance, you know, all the various frequencies that it exists in. But electric and magnetic, you know, tie into the last law, which we'll talk about momentarily. So again, we've got the electromagnetic spectrum here and all the different frequencies going up through the different bands and so forth, and the associated energies with them. And then this is kind of a fun chart. This basically shows how the keyboard notes. I did this originally before there were spreadsheets with a deck of Fortran cards on an old CDC computer in Livermore, where I grew up, and made a printout of all the frequencies going from acoustic all the way up through and past visible light. And what I found was that if you take one octave at a time and just keep, you know, taking that 12th root of 2 relationship and moving it all the way up to visible light, you end up with violet being E and F down to red being G flat through A flat, and then the rest of them, you know, in between there. So that's kind of fun. But there's that relationship. Again, there's that principle of interconnectedness between even the illusion that we hang out in. And again, each one of these things can be a reminder or a mnemonic of that oneness, that moment to moment we can use to either bring us to a state of unity, or if we forget, you know, the separation stuff. Oops, getting a little feedback here. Oh, the bowl. Oh. That's funny. Thank you. Other examples. Several presenters have talked about HemiSync, which is great stuff if you haven't tried it. And again, these are like training wheels. I found that years ago when I got a little Alpha Metrics brainwave monitor back in the 70s, and you know, I could put myself into a theta state pretty quickly. And probably a lot of you have done the same thing. You know, you use it and you train yourself, and then you realize, oh, well, the technology is cool, and at some point you say you set it aside and you don't need it. In the Baird Spalding books, The Life and Teachings of the Master of the Far East, they talk about the idea of if you have a staircase, you don't take the stairs with you on your back after you go up each step. You know, leave them for somebody else to benefit from. So the idea is, you know, sure, use the technology, and then at some point, you know, when you're ready to go beyond it, then do the next thing. So lissitude patterns, which we've already seen a lot of, I've got just maybe some different views into them, are examples of the harmonics. And what David was just showing on this last section with the third harmonic, this would be what this would look like if you had only a fundamental and a third harmonic and applied the fundamental to one axis going up and down and the third harmonic to the other axis. In this case, going up and down, with the third and then the fundamental going left and right. And this would be a 2-to-1 frequency ratio. These are just from Wikipedia. You can look a lot of these stuff up off the web. 2-to-3 ratio, 4-to-3 ratio, 4-to-5 ratio. And you can see just by looking at it, there's this beautiful harmony and just this elegance of natural relationships. 6-to-5, 8-to-9. I was playing around with a program called Pavre, which does some 3D graphics, and I've just made a little sequence of, again, the 1 to n relationships. So this 1 to 1, 1 to 2, 1 to 3, and this is what it looks like without the text in front of it. And it's just kind of fun to play with. And this is another example. Again, the same model in a different life. And here I was taking the idea of a lissitude pattern and putting it into three dimensions. I pulled all the waves apart, and then I started to coalesce them. And this is what the sequence started to look like. So then you start to see this cubic pattern, and finally it gets tighter and tighter. And then I added more and more iterations in the pattern, and came up with that. So something fun. So again, you know, the sound is the spheres we talked about. And again, these relate to each other. So all the seven laws are perfectly interwoven and interconnected, just as we are all perfectly interwoven and interconnected. And harmonies that we feel, again, bring us to that awareness. But we don't even have to be listening to the music. We can imagine our favorite music and just tune into that awareness. So again, it's the cause rather than the effect, which we'll talk about momentarily. Adam's friend back east gave some more examples of some neat lissitude patterns with cymatics, the work of Hans Jenny. Again, I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with this, you know, applying frequencies to shapes that show the relationships. Isn't this a cool little gadget? And this is courtesy of Eric Adams, colleague back east. He and Adam are working on this. This looks like R2-D2 almost. Isn't that cool? I actually haven't seen this in person, but I'm looking forward to it soon. And here's some of the patterns that this beautiful instrument makes, which are equally beautiful. Again, frequency relationships, the patterns that we find most beautiful, whether it's the Fibonacci series and the golden ratio patterns and the spiraling of leaves, or whether it's the pentagram cross-section of our DNA that makes a 34 to 21 angstrom relationship spiral at each turn of our DNA. All those things all fit into this relationship between harmonic and resonant quality, which is all fundamentally, if you distill it down to the essence, it's all about interconnectedness and oneness. These are just a few more examples of these beautiful patterns that relate to those cosmic principles. Aren't those lovely? Just really elegant. Grateful that he was able to get those to me in time to put into the presentation. Really nice, huh? Good. I haven't turned around to look. I'm assuming I'm seeing the same thing. The mirror principle, right? So that takes us up to the fourth law, which is the law of polarity, which states that everything is dual, everything has poles, everything has its pair of opposites. Like and unlike are the same. Opposites are identical in nature, but different in degree. Extremes meet. All truths are but half-truths. All paradoxes may be reconciled. A great symbol for the law of polarity would just be the line with two points on it. And the reconciliation of that would be a triangle, where you have the point, or the apex of the pyramid, as this gentleman is demonstrating, thank you very much, where you have the reconciliation of polarity by finding the point or the perspective or the knowingness where the duality no longer is applicable. Or basically seeing both sides of an issue, if you will, or transcending the duality. I like the Shakespeare quote. There's nothing good or bad, but the thinking makes it so. Again, it's all just a matter of finite perception. And yet, in an infinite universe, how quickly we get caught up in thinking that, oh, this is good and it's bad, and make these little finite judgments. But we can ease ourselves out of that by just forgiving our limitations moment to moment and what appear to be those of others, and realizing they're just reflections or mirrors of our own. And there we go. As an example of this, seen from the perspective of two people standing next to each other on Earth, a distant galaxy may look the same, yet seen from the perspective of two other galaxies, a distant galaxy might look very different, the edge-on versus the spiral view kind of thing. Then there's the classic Sufi story, the three blind men and the elephant. Again, this is all about reconciling paradoxes or using these laws to go back to that state of oneness. The Sufi story? Three blind men and the elephant is basically three blind men approach the elephant. One grabs a trunk, and one grabs a tail, and one grabs a tusk, or maybe it's an ear. And they all say, oh, it's all like this. Oh, no, this. Oh, no, it's like this. And they're all right. That perspective at the apex of the pyramid or the triangle, the top point of the triangle, it reconciles the polarity. I like triangles, can I say. Another favorite shape. But again, the symbol isn't important. Whatever works for you is the symbol to use. You find something that helps you go beyond polarization, by all means use it. Light and shadow, yin and yang, all the different opposites. I like this quote. The shadow is simply the person you have no wish to be, all those pieces that you haven't found a place for in your self-image. But people's true gifts and talents are often caught in the shadow as well. Another one, all wars are failures of imagination. I like that one. Another one from Carolyn Casey's radio show is she has a frequent guest is Neil Douglas Klotz, and he's an Aramaic scholar, and he says that the word in Aramaic for evil is actually more accurately translated as unripe. I really like that because basically it takes the sting and the bite out of this evil stuff. You know, it's like, wait a minute, no, that's just kind of really limited way of looking at it. Perhaps it's like a flower that hasn't completely blossomed or a fruit that isn't completely ripened. We wouldn't judge a child for not knowing calculus at age 3 any more than we would pick up an unripe banana and say, well, hey, how come this doesn't taste good? So the fifth law is rhythm. Everything flows in, out and in. Everything has its tides. All things rise and fall. The pendulum swing manifests in everything. The measure of the swing to the right is the measure of the swing to the left. Rhythm compensates. So we have the seasons, the circadian flows, the tides, the phases of the moon, the processions of the equinoxes, the yugas and the Hindu tradition, the meandering rivers. There's so many different examples of that. In terms of the reincarnation idea, again, within the encompassing illusion of space-time, if we go through all these different lifetimes to experience the different aspects of being, the different astrological, the different energetic qualities, the different... So a spiral is a great metaphor for the principle of rhythm. Of course, the pentagram has the fractal, so I picked a symbol for this that incorporates both of those. And I couldn't resist the Gershwin quote, I got rhythm, I got music, I got starlight, who could ask for anything more? That's my one and only musical component of this session. We're all rhythmic beings, and if we allow ourselves to get into the flow of our natural, intuitive responsiveness, there's no big deals. And so electric and magnetic fields are a good example, contracting and expanding. Going with the flow, that's the art form. The Aikido principle, if you will, of allowing things to be what they are and helping people get where they want to go, that kind of thing. And being attuned with the rhythm, it's the set of the sails and not the gale. Those kind of metaphors apply. I like this idea that rhythm and number are one. If you are really in a state of peaceful alignment, what happens with the heart rate variability is that you find you have a series of spikes in the second order fast Fourier transform. For those of you who know what that is, in the waveform that where you take the frequency domain of the frequency domain of the time spectrum of the bump, 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 bump of the heart, and you find that these beautiful comb-like spikes in that waveform are actually separated by the square root of phi, golden ratio. Again, nature is trying to get our attention that when we're in a state of allowingness or flowing with the intrinsic awareness of oneness, that everything lines up for us in that flow to create that awareness of interconnectedness, even in a mathematical sense, literally. Here's an example of another metaphor of, I'm just going to go to this third bubble here. Phi plus 1 is equal to phi squared. That's, a lot of you probably know that relationship of the golden ratio. I like to think of the metaphor of, it's the number which, when united with oneness, raises itself to another dimension, or phi squared, if you will. That's just kind of the way that my mind thinks. The sixth law is cause and effect. Every cause has its effect. Every effect has its cause. Everything happens according to law. Chance is but a name for law not recognized. There are many planes of causation, but nothing escapes the law. You sow what you reap, you know, the kind of classic adage. Due to the fractal nature of reality, every cause participates in an infinite number of effects branching through parallel realities. I've picked a little symbol here that shows, if you will, like an aerial view of a tree, if you were looking down, or maybe a worm's view of the roots, if you will, same idea, where you have this branching of branching of branching. Because if you think about every choice that we make has repercussions in every other choice, and we take a path that splits into an infinite number of other paths that are all different based on each individual choice. You know, the mirrored root system is a great metaphor. The take-home lesson for me, it always seems like, you know, trying to be the causative force in someone else's life is the ultimate waste of time. But it's much more effective being the cause of your own feelings, thoughts, and words and actions, so kind of obvious. But we forget sometimes. Wait a minute. I'm not supposed to be interfering with other people's free will here. Gender or generation is the seventh of the Hermetic laws. Gender is in everything. Everything has its masculine and feminine principles, manifests on all planes. So you have the male, the transmissive or active principle, or the passive and receptive principle in everything. And that's why, you know, woman contains male and female, and man contains male and female. And this law integrates the other laws. Another good metaphor is the electrical field is a masculine. If you look at the vector, it's linear, where the magnetic has this beautiful curved quality. But together, they're required for light. You can't have just one to make light. And light is neither male nor female. It doesn't experience time, space, or other illusions. All these wonderful qualities, the peacefulness that we experience has, when we have that feeling of gratitude and balance, when the yin and yang are not an issue, because we've transcended the duality on that level too, then we go beyond that.